This is Central Time. Last night, the Mount Horeb School Board met and unanimously approved new measures to accommodate transgender students. The rights of transgender students became a controversial issue last month when teachers at a Mount Horeb elementary school scheduled a reading of I Am Jazz. It's a children's book about a transgender child. The staff said they scheduled the reading to support a six-year-old student who had just transitioned.
The reading prompted a backlash in the community and was canceled after Liberty Council, a Florida-based religious liberty firm, threatened legal action. But two community readings organized by local leaders attracted hundreds of people in support of the student.
Molly Beck looks at how school districts around the state are addressing the issues of transgender students. She's a state capitol reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Molly, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, we had this anonymous decision in Mount Horeb yesterday on accommodations for transgender students. As I understand it, as you write, Mount Horeb is not alone in Wisconsin. How widespread is this issue in our school districts around the state?
I think the discussion is happening in probably, you know, most school districts in the state, but just under 70 school districts. And to put that in perspective, there's, you know, more than 400 districts have updated their district policies, their non-discrimination policies, to include prohibiting discrimination on the basis of gender identity. And just four school districts that I know of have developed policies that take that a little bit further and say, okay, that means we're going to allow transgender students to use the bathroom with assigned to the gender with which they identify. We're going to allow transgender students to participate on sports teams that are assigned to the gender with which they identify, things like that.
Before we survey what some different districts are doing, let's look at the statewide level. Are there state policies regarding transgender students?
There's not a state policy, but there is a bill that was proposed recently that has been a little bit controversial in the assembly that would restrict school bathrooms to it would place gender restrictions on the bathroom. So only biological females could use the girls' bathroom and only biological males could use the boys' bathroom, and that would apply to locker rooms as well. That, I believe, more than 300 people came to testify for and against that bill. So you can, that kind of gives you a perspective of how complicated and sensitive these issues are that school districts have to deal with when they develop these policies. So there's not a statewide policy for schools, but I think right now they're waiting on the federal government to maybe provide clearer guidance for school districts.
Well, as you mentioned, a lot of response, really emotional response to that state legislation. National groups involved there, I think, definitely involved in this Mount Horeb story. Schools, administrators, school boards, they've got to feel like they're under the microscope as they tackle this issue because they're going to get statewide attention and again, attention from national organizations on various perspectives on this issue.
Right. Right. There's a lot of national organizations that can, you know, their job is to get involved in local issues when the issue is something that their job is to advocate for or against, you know. And that can stir up debate, but I think the debate is pretty, you know, healthy anyway, just among, you know, parents and community members, taxpayers, and students about these issues. I talked to one superintendent who, he said that, you know, there was a lot of opposition to a policy he wanted to implement that would, you know, allow transgender students to use the bathroom assigned to the gender that they preferred. But, you know, a lot of people in the community just weren't okay with that. And it wasn't necessarily parents and it wasn't necessarily students that were saying that, but taxpayers nonetheless.
Let's look at a couple of specific communities that you wrote about. Middleton School District, I understand, implementing unisex bathrooms in every school.
Right, right. They have a bathroom, a gender-neutral bathroom for in every school building. They said that they're still refining their policies about locker rooms. So, and through my reporting, I noticed that that was, you know, that's an issue that a lot of superintendents said is a little bit different than the bathroom because, you know, in bathrooms you have stalls. It's not the same as going into a locker room and having to change in front of other students if that's happening. Or, you know, at the the bill hearing on the transgender bathroom bill that they talked about showering. And, you know, a lot of superintendents say there's not as much showering going on after gym as there might have been before, you know, years ago. But, you know, that locker room issue is kind of a sticky issue for some school districts, more so than the bathroom issue.
And Menasha and Madison both had different takes on that locker room issue. How did they resolve that?
Yeah, Menasha, they're doing things on a case-by-case basis, and so is Madison. There's not a policy for how things are done every time, and I think, you know, there's a different area that some students can use if they aren't comfortable, you know, and want to change in another area. But the Menasha superintendent told me that while they have a policy that, you know, transgender students can use, you know, the bathrooms that they want to use, it's not the same for locker rooms. And the superintendent said that he doesn't think that there will ever be a policy that would let that happen.
Talking to Molly Beck from the Wisconsin State Journal, looking at transgender students in Wisconsin schools and the policies that districts are creating in the midst of often controversy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Has this been an issue in your local school district? What accommodations do you think schools should or shouldn't provide for transgender students? And has this issue affected you as a student, or as a parent, or as an educator? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation with reporter Molly Beck from the Wisconsin State Journal, looking at school districts around the state and how they're dealing with transgender policies. The latest headlines came from Mount Horeb. The school district there passed a new policy yesterday after controversy surrounding a book about a transgender child.
You can share your thoughts and experiences at 800-642-1234. Has this been an issue in your community? What do you think about it? If you or your kid or your student is transgender, what has the school experience been like? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go right to a caller. We've got John on the line in Milwaukee. John, hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, what did you want to bring up, John?
Yeah, my question kind of revolves around sports and how they would classify genders within the sports. So we have, like, physical, like, scientific evidence that very distinctly shows that, you know, 20 to 30% more muscle mass in males, women and men store fat differently, average sizes vary. So how can you hope to change that policy when you start going away from biological facts and start focusing on choice?
John, thanks a lot for that call. And Molly, you wrote about this, I think, in your piece on this issue. This is something that people in athletic associations have been considering.
Right. And in 2013, they passed a policy that says that if a student, for example, if a male student wants to and is identifies as a female, wants to participate on female sports, they can do so after they go through hormone therapy, and the same for the other way around. So I think that kind of addresses that biological difference, you know, that, you know, you're not going to have a biological male student playing on a girls' team unless they've gone through some treatment that would, you know, reduce the amount of testosterone in their bodies and maybe make them a little bit less, you know, strong as they would have been before as a male.
And that was a minimum of a year, I think you wrote, and that's from the Wisconsin Interscholastic Athletics Association, is that right?
So
that's a statewide sporting body there.
Yep, that's right.
John, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to talk about the cases being made on both sides. You mentioned both with this proposed state law and local controversies. What have people been saying as the argument against accommodations of various sorts for transgender students?
Sure. A lot of the arguments against kind of lie in the privacy issue. There's some concerns that, you know, the bathroom and the locker room. Those are private places. And, you know, some have said, do we want a biological male changing in front of females? You know, I believe one legislator brought that up and said, I don't know if I want, you know, my young daughter to be exposed to that. So that's an issue. And there's also, I talked to a couple of people, and some of their opposition lies in their religious beliefs and attitudes toward, you know, homosexuality. So that's an element too. But I would say the overarching argument against is just the privacy issue and concerns about, you know, different genders mixing with each other.
And then for people arguing against the proposed state law that we mentioned earlier and mm-hmm. for accommodations in schools regarding things like bathrooms, locker rooms, things like that, what's been the argument on that side?
The argument against the bill that would restrict gender on the bathrooms and locker rooms, I think it's you know, a perspective that a transgender student, you know, a biological female student who identifies as a male told me, I'm just as male as a biological male student. That's my identity. That's my gender identity. So to not treat me the same is discrimination. And that's where a lot of superintendents are coming from. That's where, you know, the Obama administration is coming from and some of its interpretation of Title IX and discrimination issues, that, you know, if you don't allow transgender students to use the same facilities as other students who, you know, are the gender that they identify with, then you're violating their civil rights. And so that's where a lot of the argument against that bill is coming from.
So right now it seems like schools around the state, districts around the state are kind of, it's a patchwork. They're making it up as they go in the mm-hmm. absence of a state guideline, waiting for federal guidelines. Did you get the sense from talking to administrators and people on school boards that they would like some kind of guidance, some kind of directive from a higher level?
You know, I the school districts that I talked to actually seemed a little worried about having a policy from at the state level. They told me that they would rather deal with these issues at the local level, even though it is a complicated job and sometimes you have to navigate packed school board meetings and phone calls from national groups and, you know, a lot of phone calls from parents. You know, it's definitely a controversial debate when it happens, but at least the superintendents I talked to said they'd rather keep that at the local level and be able to retain their decision-making authority that they have there.
So they're worried that maybe a one-size-fits-all approach would not fit their circumstances.
Sure,
their
yeah. I've heard that a lot. That it just, you know, what might work in some school district, you know, up north might not work here in Dane County, you know, for example.
Molly, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Molly Beck. She's a state capitol reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal. We've been talking about school policies for transgender children around Wisconsin. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll get the story behind ethnic food traditions in Milwaukee.
First, what is natural food? The Food and Drug Administration is soliciting comments now about how they should regulate the word natural or all natural as it appears on food labels. The agency said they've gotten 3 formal petitions for regulation and another formal petition saying, hey, ban the term altogether.
Dan Nosiewicz wrote about the issue for Modern Farmer, and he joins us now. He's a freelance writer. Dan, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So why does the FDA want to look at regulating the word natural right now?
So the FDA has, and all of the other kind of dozens of governmental and non-governmental groups that are involved in food labeling, have been kind of ramping up their efforts to properly label things in a way that would convey to consumers what's actually in the product, which is a fantastically difficult thing to do. But, you know, they're trying, and they've gotten a bunch of complaints about this. There are, you know, several lawsuits in the process that kind of hinge on the FDA having an actual definition for the word natural, and they don't. And, several complaints lead to the FDA saying, well, maybe we should try to figure out what we should do with this word.
You say there's quite a history of the food industry using terms that just kind of literally don't mean anything when it comes to actual reality of what's in the food. You point to shade grown and farm fresh as a couple of examples.
Right. Those words, which you often see on coffee or on eggs, that's where they're really common. Those have no actual regulatory muscle behind them. Nobody's going out and making sure that these conform to a specific set of rules. And even more than that, there are no rules. Anyone can just say it about anything, and there are no rules to suggest what that might mean. So they're really misleading for consumers.
Well, that's not true of all words. What food labels does the FDA already regulate?
Right. So it's first important to note that the FDA does a big chunk of this, but there are a bunch of different regulatory groups that handle this. Some of them are governmental, and some of them are not. The USDA is the other big one. The USDA, as kind of a general rule, tends to handle meats, poultry, and eggs. And the FDA tends to handle most other things. That can be really confusing because, you know, like the USDA will handle a sausage, but the FDA will handle a sausage casing. So this can be very confusing. But in addition to those, there's also a lot of third-party regulators or auditors. So that would be like the Rainforest Alliance, which is not a governmental group, but which does have specific set of rules. And if you conform to them and are inspected, then you can get this nice little sticker to put on your package. And that shows you, you know, that you've conformed to the rules. So there are some, including Rainforest Alliance, which does have specific rules. Organic, I think people assume that organic is an adjective, but it's not. It's a very strict regulatory word that has very strict regulatory muscle behind it. There are people going out and making sure that organic products conform to the rules set out in the National Organic Program. But yeah, there are many more words that have no regulation behind them than there are that do.
Now, the FDA has released a statement about what the word natural could mean under these new regulatory guidelines or specifications. What did that statement say?
Yeah, so it's kind of a fun thing that the FDA is doing because they're basically saying we acknowledge that the word natural doesn't have any particular obvious meaning. It could be interpreted in a lot of different ways. So do you guys have any ideas about what it should mean? Is basically what they're saying to the, you know, American people. They suggest a couple possibilities. One of them, which one of the petitions that you mentioned is asking for, is just to ban it altogether, saying that it doesn't immediately convey any specific information, therefore can only be misleading. If, you know, if you look at something and it says natural, and if that doesn't obviously bring something to mind, then get rid of it. But there are plenty of other options, too. In other countries, for example, in Israel, it has a very specific meaning in terms of the processes that go into the manufacture. So a product can be labeled natural only if it uses manufacturing processes from a set list. So that would be like, you know, freezing or blending or dehydrating or frying. Those would all be natural ways to prepare food. But then something like, you know, friction-based expansion would not be considered a natural way. And obviously these terms are all kind of arbitrary. You know, eventually someone just has to sit down and be like, do we think this method is natural? Do we think this method is natural? And kind of vote on it and eventually come up with some kind of list.
Is this something that the FDA typically does? They go to the public and say, you know, here's what we're thinking. What do you guys think about the word natural?
Sometimes. They do sometimes do that. But I think this is a really big and important one, just because it's such a common word that you see on packaging, and also because we're kind of at a point right now in the food world and in this country that we're getting much more conscious of what we're eating. And so I think it's a really kind of important and pressing time to be doing it. So yeah, it's kind of a larger question than they'll usually ask.
We're talking to Dan Nosiewicz right now from Modern Farmer about the word natural. The FDA is taking this up, trying to decide what it will mean as they determine how to regulate it going forward. And one option here on the table, Dan, is using the word natural to refer only to ingredients. How would that work?
Right. So there are also a couple elements of this. So one of them the idea would be that the word natural can only be applied to unmodified products, period. So if you get like a bag of spinach, then that's totally fine. But a bag of frozen spinach would not be fine because that's been frozen and that's a production method, even though it's a preservative method. And even though people don't really have a problem with freezing things, like it's not something that people are really against.
Right. It doesn't change the composition of the spinach.
Right. And it also like doesn't really change the health benefits of it. And it's a very common method. I don't know. I can't think of anyone that's been protesting frozen food. But even so, that's a production method. And so that would not be used. The other kind of idea within this kind of ingredient list is that the only ingredients that would be allowed would be ingredients that are derived from plants and animals. So that would mean that most sugars that you can think of, which are derived from sugarcane or from sugar beets, would be totally fine because those are natural. You know, you take this gross beet that nobody wants to eat and you boil it down forever and then you extract the sugars from it. That's natural enough because it comes from a beet. But stuff like aspartame, which is used in, you know, diet sodas and a lot of sweeteners, that is synthesized in a lab. It has no actual equivalent in what we would call the real world, you know, outside of a lab. And therefore, that would be considered not natural. So that's kind of another idea.
And you talked a little bit about production methods, and that's sort of at play in food production in Israel. How might that work if we were to apply it in this country?
So that in Israel and in Canada as well, they basically just list production techniques. And if you decide that, you know, if you, meaning the FDA, if the FDA decides that these set of production methods are that they do qualify as natural, then therefore any product that only uses them would be also natural.
So what are some examples of that? I'm trying to think about what some, I don't know, maybe objectionable methods and non-objectionable as far as the word natural would be.
Right. So techniques like dyeing are in most countries considered not natural. Even if it's done with natural products, like for example, beet juice, we can always go back to the noble beet, I think. Stuff like freezing is usually considered a natural production method. Stuff like extrusion is sometimes considered not a natural method. It really is like sort of arbitrary.
What is extrusion?
Like cereal is done that way. Breakfast cereal is kind of extruded at high heat so that it pops, so the moisture's in it pop.
Ah. Wow, so yeah. This is kind of a sticky wicket for the FDA. How do they ever decide, given that huge array of options and how complicated it all gets?
Yeah, it's a total nightmare. I don't envy them on this. And also, you have to think about all the ways that the word natural can be used in different ways. You know, there's not just the word natural, there's all natural, or naturally produced, or, you know, with natural products. There's this whole, you know, like word cloud of possible phrases that could appear on a package kind of relating to the word natural. But, you know, if you say contains natural products, what does that mean? That could refer to anything. You know, salt is a natural product and pretty much every food, you know, packaged food contains salt. So therefore every packaged food contains natural ingredients. That's kind of, you know, what does that actually tell you then?
So you can understand that there would be groups out there who want to regulate the word natural, but listening to this argument break down a little bit, it makes me wonder if it's going to help consumers at the end of the day, because who's going to know what these strictly defined parameters are?
Right. Education and outreach are a huge issue with this kind of stuff. I mean, even with the word organic, which is very specific and has been around for quite a while, I think that there's still a pretty large percentage of people out there who think that organic just means like fancy or, you know, heirloom or something, and not that it has super specific laws relating mostly to like soil regeneration, which is kind of what that's designed to do. And something like natural or healthy is just a total nightmare. I kind of side with the people who just want to ban it, because I don't think that you can ever, even if you come up with a definition that people can agree on, which I think is pretty questionable in the first place. Even if you could do that, I don't think it's something that people understand. And I don't think that everyone is going to, you know, want to bother reading the FDA's like super long, boring list of exactly what the word natural means.
Well, Dan, how long is the FDA going to be collecting comments on this, and when might we see some action on it?
So they're currently collecting comments on it. You can do it on regulations.gov. If you go to the Modern Farmer Post that I wrote, there's a way to comment on there really easily. They're collecting comments until February 10th at midnight, so we've got quite a bit of time. In terms of when something, if anything, will actually go into effect, your guess is as good as mine. Could be a year, could be a decade, could be never.
All right. Well, I'm going to be looking at the word natural with a closer eye from now on. Dan, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was Dan Nasiewicz. He joined us to talk about his piece for Modern Farmer about how the word natural could be regulated on food labels. You can find a link to his piece on the Central Time Facebook page.